Commemorations will be held in Darwin this weekend to mark the 70th anniversary of the Japanese bombing of the town. In 1942, Darwin was a remote outpost, and on the 19th of February 1942, most of the population had already been evacuated. 2,000 civilians and around 8,000 military were left when the air raid began. As Madeleine Jenner reports, many of those who survived will attend the commemorations on Sunday.
On the 19th of February 1942, some radio reports told Australians that Darwin had received minimal damage in air raids. The scene on the ground was quite different.
The Japanese, realising its value as a base from which to bomb Timor and the East Indies, raided Darwin no less than 64 times.
This weekend, the National Film and Sound Archive will screen a collection of rare footage of Darwin in the 1940s. Some of it comes from newsreel, but the rest was filmed by Victor Taranoff, a construction worker and amateur filmmaker who lived in Darwin in the 40s. National Film and Sound Archive historian Graham Shirley.
The bulk of the work that he did during the late 1930s, early 40s was to supervise the construction of the gigantic oil tanks just above the Stokes Hill Wharf there in Darwin. And of course, when the Japanese first invaded, those oil tanks were prime targets for them. When he settled back in Darwin after World War II and set up his own business for a short time, he was one of the people that was involved in the setting up of what is now the Darwin Camera Club.
These are quite short pieces of silent film. Why are they so significant?
The significance of Victor Taranoff's films of Darwin is that he shot what is the earliest known or the earliest surviving colour footage of Darwin. He started shooting there in 1938, and what you see is a fairly relaxed pre-war Darwin. He continued to film even after the declaration of war in Europe, so that by 1942, when the Japanese invaded, he and his family had actually been evacuated. When he returned after the war, he filmed the quite extensive damage to Darwin, particularly the city centre and the harbour as well.
Graham Shirley says the films haven't been screened publicly in at least 40 years, and he says when he came across them in the archives, very little was known about Victor Taranoff.
It was through a friend that had been active for many years in the Darwin and Northern Territory historical movements that I was able to find some information about Victor Taranoff in the first place. There'd been a book written on the history of the Darwin Camera Club, and there's an entire page there on Victor Taranoff, and the author, Jeff Neely, talks about how he'd contacted Victor Taranoff Jr., who appeared as an 8-year-old, you know, blonde-headed kid in some of the films. So I was able to track down Victor Jr., and he's going to be attending the NFSA screening, representing the family and representing his late father.
But there are some people who don't need to see the footage to remember. ABC local radio in Darwin has spoken to several survivors who were there when the first air raids hit. Some, like former aircraft gunner Jack Mulholland, say they felt completely unprepared when the Japanese struck.
Looking up, there were these flights of heavy bombers coming in over Darwin from the south, southeast. Frightening looking things, really, because the skies over Darwin are always so blue and the planes stood out in white crosses. It looked like a gravesite approaching across a blue field. Our gun got one plane, which I saw go down. It was a dive bomber. But the ammunition we were using was sadly lacking in that the fuses were inferior because of storage and the heat for so long. The fact we didn't have any practice shoots was another terrible thing, in that we had no chance of knowing that the ammunition wouldn't perform as it should.
Guy Day Lewis was a 19-year-old sailor back in 1942. That morning he'd left his ship to go into Darwin to get supplies. He was on Darwin Wharf.
And I looked up and I saw this massive aircraft, and we thought, oh, thank goodness we got the Americans with us again. We thought they were Kitty Hawks. They just looked like Kitty Hawks. And there were 150 of them. Next thing, I suppose it would have been about 3 or 4 minutes, they broke off into groups of three. They sent three dive bombers straight into the Neptuna, which started to explode straight away. I hadn't even got on board the Neptuna at that stage. I was right on the edge of it when the bomb hit, but the bomb had wiped out the wharfie shed. And for the next 10 or 20 minutes, it was just chaotic. There were depth charges. They hadn't exploded, thank goodness, because we would have all gone up if they had. The small ammunition I'm talking about, even as things up to 4-inch shells, they all exploded, just like Sydney Krakenite.
Guy Day-Lewis ended up in the water, and with no way to get back to his ship, he headed through the devastated town.
I had to go past the post office, and of course the post office was flattened. I understood later that everybody was killed there, and then I got to the naval depot, and I said, "Able Seaman Guy Day-Lewis reporting, I can't get back to my ship." The sub-lieutenant there said, because I had no hat, I had no identification, I'd lost my dog tag, he said, "Get back to your ship." And I said, I can't get back. He said, "Back? Yep, get back to your ship." So that's what happened.
To this day, he can't remember quite how he got back to the ship, but he hopes that others do continue to remember the bombing of Darwin.
What annoys me so much is that ask anybody around the street about Pearl Harbor. They know about Pearl Harbor. But here's an attack on their own country, and they knew absolutely nothing about it. Look, two Boy Scouts, if they'd landed that afternoon, Japanese Boy Scouts, they could have taken the Northern Territory on their own. There was no defence whatsoever. I'm pleased now that before I die, people know that we were totally unprepared.
You'd never forget, would you, the recollections of former sailor Guy Day-Lewis, ending that report from Madeline Jenner. And a very big thank you to Claire Rawlinson and Kate O'Toole from Darwin Local Radio for those interviews with survivors of the bombing of Darwin. And Darwin Local Radio has produced an audio tour of the bombing of Darwin. We'll put that link on our website. This weekend, commemorations in Darwin, including the opening of a new museum dedicated to this.